You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Very happy to be joined in studio now by Browns offensive lineman Joel Bitonio. Joel, welcome back to Berea.
Thanks, man. It's great to be back. You know, new atmosphere, new feeling around the building. It's not quite finished yet, but, you know, in our makeshift locker room, it feels good to be back and around the guys again.
All right, let's talk about that new feeling. Hugh Jackson obviously addressed the team yesterday when you guys got back. What was the tenor of that speech?
He just really took control of the room. You know, he made it clear that, you know, it's a new era for Cleveland Browns football, and he wanted to make sure that we're, you know, going out there and being professionals in everything we do, and that's going to carry over to the field. And, you know, for us, a team, you know, that's in the rebuilding mode right now, we're just trying to do everything right, everything as good as we can, so we can give ourselves the best chance to, you know, put a team out there that can compete and win games.
And not only do you have a new head coach, but you obviously have some new position coaches as well. Have you been able to connect to Hal Hunter and Mark Hudson, you know, dig into their brain and look them up and kind of understand, you know, where they've been and who they are and their philosophies they bring?
Yeah, I actually, coming out of for the draft, I was Coach Hunter came and worked me out, and we had lunch when I was coming out for the draft, and he was in Indy, I believe.
Yep.
And so I kind of met with him there, and then we talked when he got here. And you know, so I've been around him a little bit, and me and Coach Hudson, I didn't really know about him too much, but we talked, you know, on the phone a little bit, and they just seem like they're, you know, right up my alley. They want to be technicians. They want to play hard. They want to finish people on the O-line, you know, and just any good team you've been on, the O-line is always, you know, tough guys that are finishing blocks, that are just, you know, trying to lead the team, and I feel like they have that same mentality, and you know, I'm here to learn, and they're here to teach, and I, so far it's been a good connection the few times I've, you know, talked with them.
Speaking of coaching, how hard was it for you guys last year with the whole Andy Muller situation where he was supposed to be your coach and then all of a sudden he was not anymore? Was that something that you think maybe led to some of the issues early on in the season?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you have a coach that, especially for me, he's the only thing I've known in the NFL, was he's my own line coach.
Yep.
And to see him kind of go down, it was really sudden too. You know, there wasn't a, if he would have not been there from the start of it, maybe, you know, it would have been a little different. But it was hard, you know, to go out there. I know Coach DeLeon did as good as he can, but he didn't have as much help as he wanted, you know,
sure,
out there. So it was a little bit different. We had good leaders though, you know, and Joe did a good job of kind of taking that. But for young guys like me and Cam and some of the other guys, you know, it was a little bit of you know, a bump in the road. And I think we did as good as we could have. But it's always nice to have continuity and,
sure,
you know, just trying to keep it the same.
All right, well, you will have that starting anew this year, hopefully for a long, long time here with Hugh Jackson and Hal Hunter, et cetera. How are you feeling? We know you had a little bit of injury trouble at the end of last year. How are you feeling coming back?
I feel great. You know, I stayed a couple weeks after the season to make sure it was, you know, good to go, and my ankle feels good. I worked out all offseason on it, and I came back and did some pretty good workouts the last few days, you know, and it's felt great. I'm ready to go. You know, it was disappointing. You know, I wanted to be there for your team, no matter what the record is. You know, I want to go out there and compete.
Sure.
You know, show the team that I'm behind them and be out there with guys like Joe and John. And it was tough not being out there, but you know, it's a learning experience for me, and you just never know when it can be taken away. So, you know, it's kind of a good mentality for me, and I'm just ready to, you know, go out there and prove my worth again.
Sure, and talk Browns fans through how different the offseason is coming in as a rookie after being drafted, you know, going through the combine, your pro days, the meetings, you get drafted, and you essentially just show up and you learn a system. And for a guy like you, played very well as a rookie, but the development that happens in the offseasons moving forward, you know, this offseason going into like now your third year, and how different you become and how you've been able to learn from the guys like Joe Thomas and even Alex Mack and their approach to come back ready every offseason to continue to play at an extremely high level.
Yeah, when you first get here, you've already been training for, you know, since my last college game, which was in December of my, you know, senior year of college. So you're training for, you know, 6 months before you even get a chance to step here. And then when you get here, you're trying to learn the offense. And like, I know who Joe Thomas was. I knew Alex Mack was. But I'm not comfortable enough to be, like, you know, learning from them right at that stage. I'm trying to learn what inside zone is. You know, I'm trying to see what we're trying to call plays or what they're blitzing. I'm just trying to make sure I don't jump off sides. Like, there's things that you don't even think about that you're just trying not to do. And that's how you're kind of learning there. And then you kind of pick things up as you go. But when you come in your second year, and a lot of the offensive things, you know, especially in the run game, were pretty similar from year one to year two. So for me, I had a chance to really pick people's brain, really kind of understand exactly why we're running things. Why are we checking away from this run instead of, oh, we're checking, I better know what to do on this one? You're kind of understanding more oh, they're checking because the safety's walking down. You know, things where you don't even think of it when you're in my first year. I was just like, okay, we're running right now instead of left. And so that was a big step. And I think this year is even bigger step. You know, I've been in two different systems now, going into a third, but I feel like I can take things from both systems, both coaches, and kind of combine it into one and really put a good foot forward.
So your rookie year was the zone, inside zone, outside zone under Kyle Shanahan. Last year it started off that way. It seemed by the end of the year maybe you guys started to incorporate some more power principles. This year going to be a power running game?
Yeah, I think any offense in the NFL you're going to have multiple, you know, offenses. You know, from what I've heard, we haven't really gone over too much, but you know, I think you're going to have the same principles, but from seeing what Hugh's done in the past, you know, I think they have a little bit more power, you know, pulling the guards, moving people around.
Is that what you like?
Yeah, I mean, I like it all, you know. Sure. As long as we're running the ball, I'm happy with that. Okay. You know, let's run, let's be downhill. You know, I think for any O-lineman, we're a lot happier going forward than going backwards.
So some changes on the line. We know Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz won't be here anymore after departing via free agency, so you could be next to a new center. Or maybe you played left tackle in college. Has there been any talk about you going from guard to tackle, or are you locked in right there at left guard?
Not yet. You know, we haven't really gone over the depth chart or anything like that, but I'm here to do what the team needs. You know, I did play tackle in college. You know, I've gotten a lot comfortable at left guard, you know.
I mean,
obviously, you love playing next to Joe Thomas, a guy like that. And you know, I feel like I could help a center in there once he gets in there and kind of help him learn as well, whoever we decide to put in there. But if they need someone to, you know, go out to tackle or bump around a little bit, I'm open for it, man. Whatever this team needs, you know, I'm ready to help him out, and let's just get the best five guys on the field and do some good stuff.
On a much lighter note, my last question is just, you know, what did Joel Bitonio's offseason consist of? Were there trips? Obviously, getting healthy, yeah. Working out, you talked about that, but were there trips? Was there vacations? What did you do in your downtime to prep for April 4th to get back to business?
Yeah, so I'm from SoCal originally, but I had to stay in Cleveland for a few more weeks, and then I went back and me and my fiance, we went to Mexico for a weekend. And we got to see, like,
nice.
The pyramid, you know, the Maya stuff, which is pretty cool. Like, I mean, obviously the beaches were nice out there, but you got to see some of the cultural stuff, which was really cool. So I got that. And then California's kind of a vacation in itself. So
yes,
I was out there. I actually had two weddings to go to this offseason. So, I mean, it was a little bit busy. I'm planning a wedding this summer.
True.
So we had a lot of, like, different flower things and venue stuff. I mean, stuff that I don't really know about. I'm just kind of writing the checks, you know, helping her out.
I've been there, bro.
But, but you know, it was great. I mean, I ended up having a place in Newport Beach where we're kind of right on the beach. So, I mean, it was just relaxing. I'd work out in the morning, come back, go to the beach. My brother was out there, you know, and he's playing basketball in high school right now. So, you know, I got to watch him a little bit and play a little one-on-one with him. Nothing too crazy. Just
who wins those games?
Well, the one time we played real serious, I got the win. But I tell you what, I actually had to play pretty hard this time. Like, usually I kind of mess around with him, but this time I was like, man, I'm working for this.
He's getting
good. So he's getting better, you know,
yeah.
And I like to see that, you know. By the time he gets too close, I'm not going to play him again. I'm like, oh, I can't do it, you know. But it was awesome, man, really refreshing. And then when you get a new coaching staff and new people and they're doing great things with the facility, you want to be back here. And
yep.
And I had enough time to relax and stuff, and now I'm ready to work. And the first couple of days of workouts have been really awesome. You know, I think we're going in a good direction.
So one of the things that a lot has been made about is this new strength staff and the new kind of philosophy where you might have your own offensive line strength guy. Have you seen anything in the first 2 days that has you excited, nervous, et cetera, about the new approach?
Yeah, it's just what you said. I mean, we have our own guy. You know, there's, I think, maybe 12 or 13 offensive linemen right now. And we have one guy that just works with us. You know, we've been with him the whole time when we're running and stuff. So we're out there with the offense, but it's different groups, you know, and we're doing our own thing as an O-line because it's different. I mean, we're probably never going to run, you know, 50, 60 yards at a time, most likely.
I remember you did that in Nevada. I saw that a few times on tape.
Yeah, but you know, we're more playing in a confined area, so we're kind of working on those things. And we go to lift, you know, we're doing different lifts and stuff. And I really like that, but it's everything specified. Like, they have our shakes individualized for ourselves, you know, things like that where they know how much we need to gain or lose, and they're kind of just working in that aspect. It just seems – I mean, there's a lot of people in there, like a lot of different coaches, which is different. You know, in a strength coach, you usually have two or three, and now there's like eight of them. So it's
they were sitting out here the whole time while this has been going on. We couldn't believe it. Like,
and
man.
Evan Marcus is your group
Marcus,
coach.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
One thing in catching up with him prior to you guys coming back, he goes, the offensive defensive line will lift and move heavy stuff, and they're going to get back to the physical aspect, which coincides with – how you guys are essentially going to run the football.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and he was an offensive lineman. He played offensive line. He's been around offensive line a lot, and I think that helps out a lot. You know, you see a guy like that, and he kind of understands where you're coming from when they're like, oh, let's run some gassers. And it's like, our O-line, is that helping the O-line? Or are we going to push sleds? You know what I mean?
Sure.
Things like that, just so where it's more about football conditioning instead of just kind of running and stuff. And I think the O-linemen have liked it so far. And it's exciting. You know, you kind of never know until you get into it. But everything so far has been really exciting and really promising.
You know, you talked earlier when Matt asked you a good question about the difference between being a rookie and then coming in your second year, now your third year. Have you seen anything different in Cam Irving, a guy who had to come in and, as you know, play multiple positions, practice everywhere? How have you seen him as kind of development maybe this offseason and the few days you've been back?
Yeah, he's been pretty confident in himself. You know, I mean, he's always a confident kid, but coming back, you know, I mean, we lost a few guys, you know, in free agency, and he's one of the guys that has more experience playing, even though he's only been a rookie. So
sure.
He's been out there and he's been running hard and he's came in good shape. And he just seems like he's ready to work. You know, he's been lifting with me and John. And it's just a good group of guys that we've been kind of pushing ourselves. And it's I like his mentality. You know, we'll see where it goes out. We got OTAs, we got mini camps and stuff coming up. But he seems like he wants to take that next step and kind of knows what he needs to do to get there.
Did you think 3 years into the NFL you'd be playing with Johnny Manziel and Robert Griffin III?
No, I mean,
playing with Colin Kaepernick in college.
Yeah, I mean, it was getting to talk to Robert. I'm excited to see what he does on the field. He seems like a really good guy. But you never know. You know, I mean, I had two Heisman Trophy quarterbacks that I have a possibility of blocking for, and Cap went to the Super Bowl and stuff. So I mean, it's pretty cool to think about that. And I think those two guys I've got more questions about than anything else, sure. In the world is, oh, how's Johnny? How's Robert? How's this? What do you think of this? And I'm like, it's just different, but that's the NFL. You put the best guys in the world at what they can do on teams, you're going to end up playing with some pretty high-profile guys. So it's a pretty cool experience.
No question. Now, you talked about when you first came in, kind of the first speech from Hugh Jackson. Is he as charismatic a coach as you've seen in your time here in the NFL or certainly in college?
Oh, yeah. He can command a room. I really like that about him. And when he's up there talking, I think everybody respects what he's saying and how he's, approaching it and just his confidence in himself, which exudes confidence in the Browns and,
sure.
And where we can go as a team. And it was fun to be out there. You know, I mean, I've seen him in press conferences. I talked to him a little bit. But when he gets in front of the room and really, lets everybody know how he's feeling about a certain situation, it's like, man, we can believe in this and we can kind of move forward with it.
Did you have an opportunity to talk to any of the Bengals offensive linemen in the offseason about Hugh and what to expect?
Not personally. Joe, I know, is good friends with their left tackle, Whitworth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he said he talked to him, through text and stuff. He said, we're going to love him. So that's the word we got. He said, we're going to love him. So I think that's a good thing. We respect Wentworth. We respect the Bengals offensive line. We think they have a good O-line in our room. And it's good that, they're a little, jealous that we pulled them away.
Yeah. All right. Last fun one, because you talked about it. The wedding planning, we got into that.
Right.
Are you going to have say on the menu, and what will be the entree at your wedding?
Oh, I definitely got that's my thing.
Okay, I figured.
We're having open bar. We're having good food. And let's dance a little bit. You know what I mean? Let's have a good time. Good music. And so we actually did food tasting. So we got to taste a bunch of stuff. And we're having, the main entree, we're going to do, a filet mignon with nice sauce and stuff. Like, it was good when I tried it. So, sometimes you get worried about wedding food. I was a little nervous.
Yeah, sure.
But that was really good. And then we got this this champagne chicken that's really, really solid. And then there's a vegetarian dish that I don't really remember what
very
it
thoughtful.
Was.
Very thoughtful, yeah.
But we got to make
That's not on your menu, so don't worry about it.
No, it's not my choice. But, yeah, we're ready to go. We're working on, little dessert bar and stuff like that. So it's a good time. I'm excited to get the wedding. It's a lot of planning.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff that goes into it that I'm like, never even knew this was a possibility, but I'm excited, to get that step.
Well, very cool, Joel. We're very happy to have you back in the building, getting back to work, and looking forward to seeing what you do this year.
Appreciate it, guys.
You got it, man.
Joel Bitonio, our guest here in the Dog Bowl. We'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It's a Daytona Airbrush t-shirt.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs, Joel Bitonio. Some good stuff there.
Great
from
stuff.
Joel Bitonio. And I like the part about the strength program. At any point in your career where you were ever like, why as a linebacker am I doing the same things that the linemen are doing or that the DBs are doing? Or is that something that you ever thought about? Because it makes a lot of sense to me.
It does make a lot of sense.
Personally, no. I really never questioned that because a lot of what we did was good content. To me, there was never a point where I just go, this is stupid for us to be doing that. But ultimately, there were times where the offensive linemen would you know, gripe and complain about running, you know, cut 110s or straight 110s or so on and so forth. And I would just be, and, you know, and I could understand where they're coming from because it's like, you know, chasing a guy down the way Betonio did in Atlanta or, you know, celebrating a touchdown meandering
right.
down the field is really the only time it matters. So the functionality behind what we do is
you
now, it makes so much more sense.
You sound a little nasally right now.
I am a little nasally right now. Something just meandered its way on over toward me.
Gibbs, what I found was very interesting, other than the stuff about the training, was that he said he loved the way that Hugh Jackson commanded in a room and it made you believe in him. Those were his words. And I thought that was very interesting and very telling because he's heard now two coaches come in and say, hey, this is not, we're not the same old Browns. This is how we're going to do anything. The other thing that I thought was interesting, talked about how professionalism off the field and all aspects of everything they do was going to translate over to the field. But you got a sense that, you know, this is a guy who can command a room, and that was something that clearly Joel Bitonio, that resonated with Joel Bitonio.
I thought, you know, I mean, we've heard it from all the national people, and we've heard it from people who used to play for him. But now that you're hearing it from guys that are going to be playing for him and seeing him day in and day out, I thought it was refreshing. You guys asked him everything that could be asked. I mean, I thought it was interesting his response about playing with RG3 and Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
I mean, two huge names in college. And, you know, you're hoping that one regains what he had, and the other one, well, he's no longer here, and, you know, best wishes to him. But I thought he had some interesting comments on that as well.
I agree with that. And just to go back to the comment that you made, Nathan, about, you know, capturing the room, and just simply because I've studied individuals, I've studied leaders before, you know, leadership trainings and so on and so forth. And I believe, and this is kind of probably where Hugh comes across, at least to me, in our dealings with him, is sometimes it's not about the actual words that come out of your mouth and what you're saying.
The delivery.
It's the delivery. Yeah. It's the intent. It's the body language. It's the excitement. It's the confidence that we've seen since Hugh Jackson walked in this building and we saw in him walking by the Dog Bowl today that makes me want to go, is it football season yet?
Yeah.
And it's like, and he could have been saying next to nothing, but the confidence that he has, the tempo with which he walks,
the energy,
the energy that he has, that's what I believe will be latched on by this staff. Otherwise he wouldn't have handpicked. Because if you recall in his opening press conference, it was, what, I don't remember the number, but a couple 125 text messages from guys that want to come be a part of what we're doing here in Cleveland. It can only be 20, right? So it's handpicked by Hugh Jackson, and they have to march to that beat, and they have to do the things the way he wants to do them. And I think what we're going to find out is while names have been released in the offseason because they don't fit the Sashi Brown way of doing business, the Paul DePodesta way, the Andrew Berry way of doing business didn't make a lot of sense for the Cleveland Browns because we're heading towards the future. I believe there will be players that don't fit the way Hugh Jackson wants to do business on the football side that aren't going to cut it and might be a surprise to Browns fans.
I think that's very true. I think you look at a guy like Al Saunders, who has been coaching in the NFL longer than you and I have been alive.
Yes.
And the energy that he brings. And I think it's just part, and he's always wanted to be with Hugh Jackson. Was with him when Hugh Jackson was the head coach in Oakland. Now with him as he's the head coach for the Cleveland Browns. There's something to that energy. And I can say for me personally, and yes, I've been excited about everybody that's come in because you want to work so bad that you get excited and you buy in. I can say in terms of charisma, energy, and command, I haven't been around anybody like Hugh Jackson because Rob Chudzinski was very methodical, very soft-spoken, certainly a very nice guy, but wasn't an energetic, charismatic leader. Mike Pettine was kind of a little bit more fiery but stoic and almost brooding and brought that kind of intensity but was not a, you know, command-the-room, life-of-the-party, charismatic guy in the way that I believe you're seeing, you know, from Hugh Jackson. And Batonio, you saw it in his face. I mean, those are the things that you see.
Yes.
That makes you believe it. And I think that this is an organization that needs some belief, and then they need to take it a step further and start to capitalize and make those positive strides that can allow building on that belief. And I think that's where the Browns have struggled more than anywhere, because it's hard. It's one thing to say, oh, I'm so excited, I believe in this, and we're going to do it, and this is going to be great. But when you do that, and then, you know, I think that the Browns can struggle this year from an overall total win-loss perspective, but make significant strides.
I agree. And that's the point that Jim Donovan kind of put out there last Monday and Tuesday, you know, doing the show with me. You know, a big question that we had for the fans was, you know, are you able to chew on another down year, but shows you signs of success that maybe by November, December, you know, and I threw out the number. So maybe, okay, say you go 1-7, right, through 8 games, and you split November, December.
You feel great.
You feel, again, I think you feel great because to win this division, you have to play good football in November and December, flat out. Yeah, actually, in any division, winning in November, December, and finishing what you start is the only gateway into the playoffs.
Yeah.
You don't start great and then lose it.
We saw that.
That's my point. So winning late, and then I think what it does for the psyche, for Hugh Jackson, for the staff, and the members that make up the Cleveland Browns is you enter an off season, you know, winning when it matters with a good taste in your mouth, and that's something that we haven't had in a very long time. Finishing the way we have with 5 straight, and then running off, you know, how many last year? You know, 3. I don't even remember what it was.
It was bad.
It was bad.
It was bad. Okay.
Right after San Francisco, what was that? At least three straight.
Yes,
3 straight.
It was bad. So I wanted to go back to something to kind of build on this and to build on what you're talking about here with this Cleveland Browns team.
Go ahead and build on it, bro.
So there was a game in 1980 that the San Francisco 49ers played, and this was the year that they had just kind of started getting into it, started trying to get better. Bill Walsh was there, and this was the game that they all say turned it all around, and it was week 14 of that 1980 season. And this was a team that at that point, you know, they'd been struggling. They came out of the gate good. They had, at this point, they had lost 8 of their last 10 games. And they're playing the New Orleans Saints for the second time at home. And they were down 28 points in that game. They made up the 28-point deficit in the second half to win the game 38-35. It's in the top 10 comebacks of all time on the NFL Network when they do those comebacks, etc. And what was so interesting about that game is that that's the one where Joe Montana led them back, and that's where they felt that they finally, that they had turned the corner, that this was their opportunity. And now, this was a 1-15 Saints team at the end of that year, but they made up a 28-point deficit, and that's what was the confidence, and then they went on to win the Super Bowl next year. But Randy Cross talked about it. That's, you need that late season turning point. When you get that, you can really build some momentum. And that's what the Browns have not had. They have not had anything but late season swoons. And hopefully this is a year, maybe it doesn't start out like you want, as it's a new system and you're young, but you see real build later in the season. That's what I'm hoping for the most out of this season for the Cleveland Browns, along with the franchise quarterback. Take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear some more Mike Silver. Gibbs finally ready to give me what I want from Mr. Silver after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
I like this.
This is your jam right here. He's rocking out right now.
There we go. Good.
Yeah.
We're bringing more songs.
I like it.
It's a process.
I can give you a playlist, and it'll blow people's minds. But I don't want to do that. I don't want every entrance song to any wrestler ever between WWF and WWE to also hit these airwaves.
Now, there's a couple. Like the one we played to start the show today. Or the out of the first segment.
The evolution ones.
Evolution, man. Yeah. That's not horrible.
Thanks, Gibbs.
There's some cheesy ones that we're gonna ignore, but
sure.
We did.
There are plenty of non-wrestling songs that are
Zach
bad.
Mike Dreamer was on our board on I think Wednesday when Gribbs and I did the show.
Yeah.
And he came back from a break with a wrestling song, and I go, "No Zagura, no wrestling music."
Which song was it? Do you remember?
It was the New Day crap.
Oh yeah, New Day. It's not a great song. It's just more.
It's the garage band.
It's the spirit.
I like playing
of what
it
New Day
like
invokes.
coming out of the first segment. We're into the show or the top of the second hour.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's more the spirit that it's the vibe that it's going for.
Exactly.
Sure.
All right. Yeah. What else we got with Mike Silver?
Mike Silver. By the way, Indians update. 2-2 in the fifth, I believe.
Strong.
Deuces.
Deuces. They've come back to score two off of Mr. Price. Always a good thing. And by the way, the other news of the day, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but the rookie symposium is going away.
I think good. I think that's probably a good thing.
No, that was something good for us to talk about. We had people. We had sound. We had stuff going on.
And what will replace it?
It's a great question.
Team training.
So yes, they're taking everything in-house. So each team will do everything in-house.
You know what? Actually, I believe that players will miss that opportunity because I think mine was in Palm Beach, I want to say. And it wasn't so much about being in Palm Beach. It was players that you played with, you know, who are now scattered throughout the NFL that, you know, from Ohio State that, you know, you're going to have only a few opportunities moving forward to see. You get to see them again. In the garb of their new team, players you played against, you know, in the Big Ten, other conferences, or players that you, in some cases, I am not ever starstruck, but it's like players that you admire from other schools. You know, for me, you know, EJ Henderson being drafted by the Vikings, he's the guy that won the Butkus the year that I was the finalist, or Teddy Lehman from Oklahoma, or, you know, Carson Palmer and connecting with him.
So is it almost, do you think they're doing because it's maybe too much like that? It's too much of a reunion and guys are just hanging out and catching up? And
yes. I think it's also, there's no way to mandate taking the phones away from the individuals. So all these athletes, 260 some guys walk into this, you know, big room. They all have their phones. The NFL is doing their best to give them great content. Chris Carter and Warren Sapp and you know, Marshall Faulk. All these guys, you know, speaking, Lawyer Malloy, sharing stories from everything under the sun, financial and business and life and drugs and alcoholism and, you know, and so on and so forth. And all the good things that come with the NFL as well. And guys are, you know, tweeting, Instagramming, texting their girl, texting their boy, wish this was over, or being texting late to meetings, falling asleep in the symposium.
Right.
I think that's more so what it's about.
Yeah, so this way it's in-house, and it's going to be for the drafted rookies as well as the undrafted.
Yeah, I think that's the other key when the undrafted rookies get to be a part of that, which should be the case.
Yeah, I think that's good.
All right, back to Mike Silver and his conversation with Tony Grossi on Hey Tony on ESPN 1540.
More than two words, though. It's more than a two-word
It is more than two words currently going on Twitter right now.
Yes.
Mike Silver on his relationship with one Hugh Jackson.
We are from the same town in the same exact era, same high school graduating year, and we didn't know each other, but I feel like we're far more similar than people would expect, given that Hugh came from a much tougher part of town than I did, and I'm talking about L.A., but I don't know. He throws himself out there. I admire not only his guts, but his skill as a play caller and as a talent evaluator. And we just get along. And then I really felt he got a horribly raw deal in Oakland and wasn't shy about sharing that. So once that happened, I became the de facto president and maybe only member of the Hugh Jackson fan club for years. So I'm excited to see him get another shot, but mostly it's just one of those things we get along.
The de facto president of his fan club. You got to like that.
Are you the vice?
Huh?
Are you the vice?
Of Hugh Jackson's?
Yeah.
I mean, I like him. I don't know him well enough to give myself that kind of a title yet.
Give it a year.
I'd put myself right now for the Jared Goff to Cleveland movement. I'll take a vice president.
Campaign manager?
Yeah.
Campaign manager.
Yeah, vice president, something. Yeah, something like that.
Mike Silver Grossi asked him about reporting that the Browns lied about Johnny Manziel's concussion. Remember there was that whole controversy?
Yes.
There were some
yes.
things. The team came out and was defiant that was not true at all. And Mike Silver, maybe not using the right words, you got an apology today, Cleveland Browns fans.
Well, I can't, you know, I should not have said on TV that they lied without knowing that for a fact. I'm obviously not thrilled about the fact that I blurted it out on TV and then 5 days later somebody noticed, and that's my bad. But it does seem to be indisputable that Johnny Manziel showed up drunk from a night out and was then declared out. So if Johnny Manziel told them he had concussion-like symptoms and they had to follow protocol, maybe that happened. Maybe someone nudged him in that direction. I have no idea what actually happened, but I do know that people who were there believe that he was drunk, that's unequivocal, and that suddenly he ended up in the concussion protocol. So I don't think it was a proud moment for the Browns organization, and I recognize that they've made a lot of changes since then, which I consider to be positive changes. But, journalistically, I have to be more careful about saying unequivocal things, I gotta put reporting standards on things I say on TV too.
Respect, absolute respect for that. Owned it. Said I was wrong. I've got to do better than that. Nothing more you could ask for, right there.
No,
than that from Mike Silver.
On to the top two quarterbacks in the 2016 draft. Michael Silver.
Giddy up.
On Carson Wentz.
I think he. If you talk to talent evaluators, they believe that Wentz had a better combine throwing session than Goff. I think pro day for pro day, I don't know how much stock I put into it, but I know that Wentz was impressive in his pro day. I think he's more of a type A personality, so when you meet with Wentz, he's going to be more more Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, like take charge, whereas Goff is more of a Matt Ryan, Eli Manning kind of, quietly assertive or not hitting you over the head with it. So I think you put all that together, and then the new guy always comes up. Teddy Bridgewater, we saw this a couple of years ago. You're anointed the number one overall pick, and then people pick you apart, and then people come out of the woodwork. And, even Peyton Manning, who was the number one pick for years in people's minds, when it came right down to it, the late charging Ryan Leaf with the athleticism and the arm got to the top of many people's draft boards. Fortunately for Colts fans, he did not get to the top of theirs ultimately. But it
interesting take there. And then let's put the other cupcake in that two cupcake holder here.
On Jared Goff.
Awesome. And I love the kid. I'm not a talent evaluator, but of course I have watched him a ton because of my Cal alum and season ticket holder and now Cal parent status. But from his first game on, and he started as a true freshman, he makes quick decisions, he makes good decisions, he gets rid of it very quickly and throws the hell out of it. Most of all, I just love the resilience and the demeanor. They had probably the worst defense in the country for his first 2 years. They were absolutely abysmal, 1-11 his first year, and you never saw him with the bad body language. You never saw finger pointing, never said anything publicly other than kind of a quiet resilience and positivity. And ultimately he was able to get them to a much better place, which is, and I don't discount that. It's really hard, especially in college football with all that inertia, to go from atrocious to pretty good in that shorter time.
And that's true. We talked about that. You would agree with that statement. In the world of college football, it is tough in a big time conference to go from not good to competitive and winning in the 2-year period.
I would.
I like that he's done that.
You can say didn't win a conference title, never played in a big bowl game. You know, those that feel a franchise quarterback to be drafted where a franchise quarterback deserves to be has to play on those big stages, but that's not always true.
Yeah.
It's not. You know, I don't remember Ole Miss with Eli winning national championships, you know, smoking through that SEC division. He was a really, really good player at Ole Miss.
Because he wanted to go there, which was a little overmatched.
Correct.
In that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Well, a lot of, they produced quite a few pros, Ole Miss.
They did. Yeah. And they still do.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yes.
It's been better than, just like for the, Cal hasn't won a national championship or been in danger of winning a championship, but they've produced some pretty darn good pros.
Yeah.
I think, so they did this somewhere, the best trio, quarterback, running back, wide receiver to ever come out of one college. So you could use any time, and Cal won Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch, DeSean Jackson.
We need a break.
And we'll take a break. We'll be back wrapping it up here on CBD.
Strictly out of curiosity, what would happen? You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on this Tuesday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850. Big show tomorrow, Gibbs. Who we got lined up for tomorrow?
Big one indeed. Andrew Healy from ESPN.com. And
he penned that analytics article about Goff.
That everybody's
he wrote it by
about.
Hand?
Yes.
The really big show is talking about it. Pat McManaman.
Did he sign the Constitution?
No.
Lot of different
Don't
people.
Don't be distracted. Yeah. Focusing on all the wrong details.
Andrew Healy tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We're working on a draft guru as well.
And I would imagine we're going to have sound from Hugh Jackson and RG3. Their press conferences tomorrow or all the media. There's a lot of – tomorrow's the media day for the Browns. Classy move by the Browns to move it, by the way, from yesterday to today because of the Indians game.
What?
Their media availability.
Their media availability.
Oh, such a kind gesture.
It is a nice gesture indeed. So we got all that tomorrow, so a lot to look forward to. Hope everybody enjoys the rest of their day. We want to thank Joel Bitonio for being with us.
Yes.
We want to thank the spirit of Mopedman. I just got a tweet from someone that lets us know that the spirit of Mopedman lives in all of us.
It does.
And he'll be back by the end of the month.
With the flattest tires you know.
That's right. I heard Mopedman has to use those caveman cement tires.
He does.
Yeah.
His middle name is PSI.
PSI. Deflategate.
Ken PSI Mopedman.
Mopedman. The Duncan Dutchman. The slamming Swede. We'll be back with tomorrow with more Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.